In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy, and I have a very special guest, which I would have said even if he wasn't here, but he's sitting right next to me. It's Chris J. Mancini.
Great to be here, Rick. Thank you. Another lovely Comic-Con podcast. You got to get as many in as we can.
Oh, that's right. Now that everybody has one.
Yes.
Has a podcast. But you guys being the comedy film nerds,
yes,
of which you are one of hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been doing your podcast?
We've been doing the podcast for about 8 years, and the website is 9 years.
Oh,
so
geez.
we've been going at it for a while.
It's funny. We've known each other for a while because of... How did we meet? I'm trying to remember how we met.
We met probably through Graham, where...
Graham Elwood.
Graham Elwood, where we had basically attended one of your movie extravaganzas,
yeah,
and then Graham got to know you, and then from there, we became a part of it.
Yeah, well, because why not have comedy film nerds on your panel, for Pete's sake?
So, but it was always a panel that we really enjoyed, and it was a panel that we would come to see when we would come to Comic-Con, and now this is the sole reason we come to Comic-Con.
Yeah, I also get you in.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
There we go. You got to use your seniority.
Yeah.
The beard has got to be good for something.
It's harder and harder to get badges now, with Comic-Con. Even if you're a pro, you could just show up, show your Writers Guild card or whatever, and you could be. And now there's a whole extra process.
So I've known you for years, but I have never known how you and Graham got together, because you are not, your first job is not stand-up comic.
Right.
Right. So how did you and Graham meet and get together?
Well, we definitely met through stand-up when I was more active in doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. I used to book a show, actually, at Borders Books. That's how long ago it was.
What's that?
Yeah, exactly. A bookstore.
Right.
I'm not familiar with those. Borders Books, wasn't that the first big chain to go out of business?
Don't you mean Barnes & Noble? Nobody says, wasn't that the first chain? They go, you mean Barnes & Noble? No, that's the last one. Standing.
Yeah. So we had met, and we worked together in a couple different projects, and then we just had lunch one day, and we were talking about how we could get comedy and movies and comedians and filmmakers all together in one place, and Comedy Film Nerds was born, where we have comedians and writers write funny movie reviews, but also insightful. We always wanted to make the brand funny but informative.
I wish someone had told me that, because I've contributed a couple to your site. I didn't know I was supposed to be funny. Maybe I'm just naturally so stupid that people go, oh, yeah, this is a funny review.
No, yeah. yours are funny and entertaining as well.
I've been meaning, actually, I should say this on record, I've been meaning to continue, because you guys, I don't have to review for you the normal stuff, but it would be great if I would review what I'm best known for.
Exactly.
Which is the action and Asian action and also... Do you write reviews for your site?
Graham and I have a time constraint issue,
yes,
where we're stretched a bit thin with, you know, finishing, it was finishing Earbuds, working on LA Podfest, and running Comedy Film Nerds. We don't write as much as we used to. We do want to correct that and start writing more reviews.
Well, let me know, because mm-hmm. you're my main competition for animated films.
Yes.
I see them not because I have children.
Right.
You have children, so you see them.
Yeah.
And to me, of course, animated movies are among the best thing being done today. Although more and more crap is it, as the computers allow people who are not as talented as the think banks of let's just say Disney, because DreamWorks is not even in it anymore. We don't even know what DreamWorks is anymore in terms of animation. They've been bought up by Illumination, and they're owned by someone else. So
there's always three different companies and layers that you have to go through.
Right. But I want to give animated movies, especially the ones that are great, and there are there are some that are really great.
Yes.
They're loved. But anyway, tell me about your history with movies? Why do you love movies? When did it start for you?
You know, I've always loved movies, and it really started when I was a kid and just would always go to see, you know, the movies that were coming out. And it was just when you grew up in the suburbs in Pennsylvania, there's the mall or the movie theater. That's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
You throw a bunch of quarters into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and you try to play to the end, or you go to the multiplex. And it was, you know, I grew up on Spielberg films and
wow.
and War Games and the 80s movies is what I really grew up with. But you know, it wasn't just the movie theaters. Back then, we also had a thing called video stores.
What?
And you would go in, and there would be all these movies that you had never heard of.
Tell me more, Grandpa.
Yes. that didn't get theatrical releases, mm-hmm. so you could catch up on old movies. You could check out movies that never got, you know, made it to the movie theaters. And, you know, there was a lot of signs, be kind, rewind.
Yes.
When you had to, we had such futuristic devices as a VCR rewinder that was dedicated solely to rewinding videotapes before you brought them back.
You really don't have to do too much detail because, remember, this is my podcast and my audience is kung fu people who tolerate me and, you know, and say, all right, give the kid a... But of my age, I think most of my listeners know what video stores are.
Yeah.
The more important thing for me is... Was there a certain kind of film that you liked more than, musicals, science fiction? What did you like the most?
I would always gravitate towards the fantasy and science fiction, whether I was reading novels or whether I was watching movies. It was always genre for me.
Mm-hmm.
Some horror, but it was mainly science fiction and fantasy were my bread and butter. Now, growing up, there weren't that many fantasy movies.
Ooh.
I mean, there
Whoa.
Was... You know, yes. you get Hawk the Slayer with Jack Palance.
Right.
It's, you know, you get really...
For years and years and years, the only one that I thought was any good at all was The Magic Sword with Lee Horsley.
That's going back.
That's
too,
going
yeah.
back. Mm-hmm. But even though not that far back, because Lee Horsley was, you know, 80s or whatever.
And then impossible.
Yeah,
and then the Conan movies came. And I'm like,
right.
okay, finally we get some actual fantasy movies mm-hmm. that were coming out. And then you had Excalibur. There were like certain like little blips of brightness and fantasy, but science fiction was another story. There
right.
was a lot of interesting science fiction being done. So I would read it, I would watch it, and it was always those kind of formative years of like. But then I also enjoyed the adventure serials, Indiana mm-hmm. Jones, and you know I liked the big spectacle of going to the movies
mm-hmm.
and. You know, bringing and being brought into a different world. Like, you know, as a kid, as most kids are, like, I would have been bored by dramas or, you know, comedies, okay, you know, like,
yeah.
everyone was into Porky's, and I was like, nah, you know, but
yeah.
I was more like, no, show me the next Indiana Jones,
yeah.
show me the next Star Wars, show me something, you know, really, outside of what the normal filmmaking would be, like that the adults are watching.
Was there one film, for me, the one film that changed everything was Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
Was there one film that, you know, sort of went, your eyes opened and said, Forbidden Planet, although that's too early.
I'll tell you, it was a cliche. It's a cliche, but it really was Star Wars because I was 8.
Right,
and,
perfect.
And I was watching it, and it was like one of my first... PG movies,
right.
really, and it was the kind of movie that, like, wow, I have to wait in line to go see a movie? This is weird.
Yeah.
Why are all these people going to see this movie?
Yeah.
And, you know, went with a bunch of family members. It was down the shore, down the Jersey Shore,
mm-hmm.
and went with a bunch of, you know, cousins, and I didn't even know what this movie was. I'm like, why is everybody going to see Star Wars? What is this?
And then you found
so,
out.
And then I found out, yeah. and then I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. This is amazing. And, you know, also grew up in a time, too, where there were a lot of drive-ins. So
really?
Wow. You would go with the family, and you would get in your pajamas as mm-hmm. a kid, and you would see a double feature of, like, maybe Treasure Island and Swiss Family Robinson. You would see the Disney movies, the live-action ones. Now, it's interesting that Disney is revisiting that golden era of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping that... the movies like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea mm-hmm. and Swiss Family Robinson and Treasure Island, when they do get remade, and I'm sure they're all in development,
of course.
I'm sure, at Disney,
yeah.
They don't lose the edge that they kind of had. Like, when you look at 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea,
yeah.
there were some very more mature themes taken from the book that were not sugar-coated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you call that murder, mm-hmm. you know, and when you, like, who played Captain Nemo? It's a very famous actor.
James Mason.
James Mason. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't treat it like he was in a kid's movie. He treated it like, no, this is a drama movie, and I'm talking about, you know, yeah, I'm killing people, but look what, this is what happened to me.
Right.
This is why I do what I do. And
you just gave, by the way, you just gave me a $1 million idea, because
yeah.
Disney is taking all its animated features and turning them into live action.
Yes.
They should take all their live films and turning them into animation.
Well, Treasure Planet didn't do so well.
Yeah. I can tell you a story. I was brought in, speaking of science fiction authors, that was going to be another question I was going to ask you if you had favorite science fiction authors.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote 2 science fiction novels,
mm-hmm.
and I was called into Disney.
Oh,
and
okay.
they said, we're interested in buying the rights to this.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful little chat, and then I went away, and years later, Treasure Planet comes out, and I'm mm-hmm. going, oh, some of this looks familiar.
Yeah, that never happens in Hollywood.
But
yeah.
hilariously, the guy who directed Treasure Planet
mm-hmm.
Was ruined by it. I mean, just destroyed mm-hmm. him at Disney. And the next time I saw him was behind a desk at DreamWorks when I went in and did the seminar for Kung Fu Panda.
I see. You know, you never know. It's not like Black Cauldron destroyed Tim Burton. So, you know, you never wonder.
Yeah. That's the one they should remake. But
That is such an odd movie. If you watch Black Cauldron, I've never seen an animated movie that had its tone all over the place. Like, oh, this part is for 4-year-olds. This part is now skeletons are killing humans.
Yeah. Well, that came out at the time also of The Black Hole, which was mm-hmm. their live-action science fiction epic.
Yes.
And you could see that it was somebody at that company, this is my theory, somebody at that company had the idea to do those two, The Black Cauldron and The Black Hole. Their black period.
Yes.
And
we need a Disney version of Star Wars.
Well, I don't see, that's what happened. You see, because Disney had died relatively soon before that, and Ron Miller was in charge, I think his mm-hmm. son-in-law, and he had no understanding of anything. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do what was best and be in the Disney manner, mm-hmm. but they still had geniuses working for the company.
Right.
So I think they said, we're going to do this, we're going to rise above everything, but we're also going to have that little marketing hook that it's science fiction, it's like Star Wars.
Right.
And then it went through the Ron Miller prism.
Right.
Which is, I don't know, Disney knew what to do. Anyway, that was fun. We're going to keep that in. Ron Miller didn't know what to do, so it was like the recent Mummy with Tom Cruise. It's like, throw everything at the wall. Let the audience decide.
Right.
But of course, once you do
that. Oh, and we did.
Yeah, that's right, we did.
We did decide.
So anyway, I interrupted you, and I apologize. Go on.
So,
you said and. That's where you were.
What was I talking about?
I don't remember.
Okay.
What's your favorite?
Actually, I went to the, recently, to the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and I saw a back-to-back screening of Tron and the Black Hole.
Holy
theatrically.
Yeah.
And it was a slog. But
I don't know why you did that to yourself.
It was, you know, it was more of like for nostalgia reasons, and they had a lot of the science, they had a lot of the visual effects people there.
Oh, wow.
To talk afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And the most interesting thing they said is for Tron, they were up for, or I think, I'm trying to remember if it was Tron or Black Hole. I think it was Tron. It was, they were talking about being up for the Visual Effects Awards for the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how difficult it was to do the computer effects with mm-hmm. the vector drawings
right.
and everything, and how really hard it was. And they got snubbed because the Academy and the other voters were thinking, well, if you used a computer, you cheated. You didn't really do visual effects.
Yeah.
And it was such an ironic thing to hear that. And you could tell that that was like one of the turning points of like mm-hmm. practical effects to computer generated effects. It was not necessarily the turning point, but it was the beginning
mm-hmm.
of how it would actually change.
Yeah.
So
I remember there were reports at the time when they were making Tron that they were doing a farcical version, basically, where, you know, when the scene where Bridges is walking across the computer banks, they had him do a take where he's creeping like an old-time serial villain. And so, again, they were completely unsure, and they were taking no chances, except by doing that, you're insulting the audience.
So, you know, it's a weird thing. It's like sometimes the technology moves quickly and there's some people that are like, no, they just reject the change. Mm-hmm. And some people embrace it. And, you know, it also has to do with age, too. Like, I can't possibly use Snapchat. I'm too old. You know?
Speaking of that, do you need to use Snapchat?
No, okay. I don't.
Mm-hmm. In any case, so it was science fiction mostly, and then you're a filmmaker as well.
Yes.
You did Even Before Earbuds, the podcasting documentary, which is...
That will be out in September. We don't have the exact date yet. We can't announce it, but it will be out in September. Mm-hmm. Currently, though, it is available at comedyfilmnerds.com, but it will go wide with a distributor in September.
Yes, I often go wide.
Yes.
But usually without a distributor.
It's, but, you know, it's also for our fans that... we're like, yeah, I like buying stuff in your store, but it's just easier for me to use iTunes.
Yes, right, of course.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, come on, old man, get with a program. It's creating that's important, not the medium with which the creation is shared.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So now you also before EarPods, you also were a filmmaker.
Yes, I did a lot of award-winning short films. And I've got a grant from the Sci-Fi Channel, back when they were called the Sci-Fi Channel, instead of just Sci-Fi. Mm-hmm. I worked with them, creating short films. I had a DVD release called Myopic Visions that had all of my short films together. Mm-hmm. That distributor went out of business, but there are still some left at Comedy Film Nerds. Yeah.
I have one.
Yes. And I really, when I made short films, I never... cut any corners. Like, I always made them a little more epic probably than I needed to. Like, mm-hmm. I shot a black and white 35 millimeter film about a hitman and a clown who switch bags and find the other's job better, and it was shot all with no dialogue and just music. Mm-hmm. So that's actually on YouTube in the Comedy Film Nerds YouTube channel. You could check that out. It's called Hit Clown. But I always loved the medium of film, and I always treated short films like mini films. Mm-hmm. Like, you see a lot of short films, especially now on YouTube, they're just sketches.
Right.
You know, they're just...
ideas.
They're funny ideas, funny things that, you know, you can watch for a minute or two. Mm-hmm. Whereas I always did a beginning, a middle, and an end, even in 13 minutes.
Right.
Like, which I always wanted to do. But, you know, and it's always been the goal to make more features. I made one disastrous horror movie.
What's the episode where you talk about that at length? That's I recommend everyone listening to this podcast.
Yes, I'm trying to remember the number, but it's on my website. If you go to chrisjmancinionline.com, I have a link to the episode that tells the entire story of how a movie was ruined twice. Actually, three times, now that I think about it. And I tried to save it twice, and it was ruined three times. I always say, you know, we made lemonade twice, they made lemons three times.
Lemons take over. What was the name of that movie?
The name of the movie is Asylum. It's a movie that shouldn't exist, but does.
And well.
Yeah.
And, well, it should.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be a horror movie about a SWAT team that investigates demonic possession in an insane asylum. So it was a kind of an action Session 9. It was like an action version of Session 9. It would be creepy, weird, it had monsters in it, and it had demonic possession, but it also had a lot of action.
Yeah.
So a company bought it from me, ruined it, and brought it back to me and said, this movie came out so bad, can you fix it for us by making it a comedy so we can deliver it to Lionsgate? And at first I went, what? And so I actually said, the only way I can do it is if I make it into a comedy and shoot wraparounds of a horror company destroying a movie as it's being made. And then,
like what you know.
Yeah. And then when we watch the footage, we'll have like a Mystery Science Theater, the two editors commenting on it. So I put it all together. I shot the extra scenes, and I created an entire director's cut. I reworked the entire film. Mm-hmm. So, and then what they did is they... still didn't figure out what it was. They never rebranded it. It was supposed to be rebranded Death of a Horror Movie, so people know it was a horror comedy.
Right.
Instead, they kept the name Asylum. They used artwork that's not even in the movie to trick horror fans into buying it. So there's a lot of horror fans that are very angry that didn't understand what it was, because then the company also took out half the joke. So now the movie was in like no man's land of it's not completely a comedy. It was not completely a horror. Like, I set it up even as a found footage movie. You know, like how you start like with the cards at the beginning. It's like in 2014, this company sent their film crew to Bulgaria, and the footage that came back was shocking, disturbing, and horrifying. And then the next one was for all the wrong reasons. They took out for all the wrong reasons.
Of course.
So they set the tone even of the beginning. It was all off. And then, so what I thought, well, at least they'll bury it. No one will actually see this movie. And then it got a wide release. I get emails from like fans in Japan and all these places. Oh no, it just showed up on Chiller. And it was like, oh my God, why do they keep releasing this movie?
Cause they can.
So yeah. And, so our fans who know the story behind it love it. They think it's hilarious because they understand what it was.
Yeah.
Whereas the horror fans are furious. But the good news is I got the rights back to the script as part of the deal of me, quote, fixing it for them. So I'm able to remake it in the proper manner as it was supposed to be made.
Now, you mentioned there was a director's cut.
So,
but you're not legally able to.
I don't know anything.
Post it?
Yeah, no. I mean, the director's cut of the comedy version is really what would have been a cult classic because it would have been like
it's already a cult.
Yeah,
classic.
Yeah, it's already. It would have been intentionally. Yes, at least it would have been okay. Well, this is something salvageable. People know what they're getting into. It's a horror comedy of a movie that got destroyed, but for some, you know, it's one of those baffling. Like, how could you possibly not rebrand it after we had all these discussions?
Here's the I was asked what the difference was writing for Hollywood and writing books at home in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, with the book, whatever you create is your child.
Yes.
And you with books, you bring your child into the editor, and you have a discussion, and the editor might want blue eyes, but you want it to remain green eyes, and maybe you compromise, have one eye, dumps its guts on the floor, and then looks to you and says, there. Isn't that better?
Yeah.
And your job as a Hollywood writer is to go, yes, in the most convincing way possible.
Yeah, it's a broken system for sure. You know, and it's I remember I was at a pitch meeting once for TV for Fox, and the woman came in. She had a stack of pilots. She's like, this is ridiculous. I've got to sort through all these pilot scripts. We have to make them. None of these are any good. And I'm guaranteed I have to make three or four of them. The system is broken. So what do you have for me?
There you go. That's right.
And I'm like, wow, I can't imagine this pitch session going any better.
And I'm sure that resulted
in a new
Indiana Jones.
In a non-sale. So, but it's interesting that now the flip side of that, the good thing is that, you know, some of these barriers have simply gone away with the internet,
right,
with different ways to get content out there. Anything from short films to viral videos to podcasting, you know, these gatekeepers are gone. You can generate an audience and generate a following through just online doing something that you love. Like a good example is your books. I mean, you're writing your books. You have very little, very little oversight,
right,
and you get them directly to the audience. It's like if you have an internet connection, you can get your book. I don't have to drive around and find the last open bookstore,
right,
to actually go get your book.
Yep. And also, when I started writing, I had wonderful editors, I had wonderful agents, and they were involved in the creation of the best book possible. Now they have spell check. And this actually happened on the last novel I wrote. We handed it in. It was sent to the copy editor, and I make little quote marks, air quotes, because when it came back, everything in the book that said "and over there" became Andover, Massachusetts.
So somebody just hit spell check and said, I copy edited
and,
it.
And, yeah, exactly. And that's commonplace.
My job's done, yeah. And I will say this, if you are a aspiring writer, if you are a writer of a self-published writer, or if you even write with a small publisher, get a copy editor. It's so important to have a good copy editor. Like when I wrote my book for Simon & Schuster,
right,
they Pacify Me, a handbook for the freaked out new dad. We had a regular editor, and the regular editor went through and made changes, not just for content changes, but he actually did a first pass of copy editing too, which was part of his job, but he wasn't the copy editor. It literally went through the first pass of content and copy editing. And then after that, a dedicated copy editor went through the book again. So, you know, there's these layers, but they're important.
Yeah.
They're really important because it's like, you know, when you watch a movie that's sloppily edited, when you're reading a book that's sloppily copy edited, it lowers the quality.
And no reader is going to blame the copy editor for this.
No.
I mean, I have friends who give me their novels to read, you know, and they've self-published it with the crappiest cover mm-hmm. imaginable. I'm saying, would you walk outside wearing those covers as clothes?
Yeah.
You wear something nice. You don't want to mark yourself as an amateur. If you want to be taken mm-hmm. seriously, you have to be serious.
Mm-hmm.
Or even in comedy. So, yeah, I completely agree. But we jumped a huge section there. Who are your – were your did you have favorite science fiction writers?
Larry Niven, Integral Trees.
Sure.
I
almost worked for him once.
Really?
Almost.
Is he still alive?
I don't believe so, but I can look it up, and it'll be on the supplementals, everybody.
Right?
Yeah.
Ray Bradbury is someone who I know you knew.
I did know him, yeah.
And his writing was just on a different level of everyone else's.
Absolutely true.
And it was one of those things where even just a short story had such an impact of, you know, everything from Illustrated Man to R is for Rocket,
right.
And even any of these short story collections, but Something Wicked This Way Comes, they're all fantastic. Even things like Dandelion Wine that are not genre-based,
yeah.
And just his memories of, you know, the summer,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can almost smell the freshly cut grass as you're reading his books. It's fantastic. And I'm trying, and I had a guilty pleasure of Alan Dean Foster.
Oh gosh,
you know, I wouldn't put him in the Nobel Prize winning writers, and
he's a great storyteller.
But it was one of those, like some of his stories, like The Vanishing Point and stuff, where mm-hmm. they were almost popcorn sci-fi reads,
right?
Is where the way you could kind of look at them,
but really good ones.
And they were just. And he wrote like a bunch of fantasy too that I consumed. I consumed all sorts of sci-fi and fantasy of varying degrees of quality.
Yeah.
So I would read. One of the ones that I would really get into, and then I even started rereading now, was Robert E. Howard.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I would read all the Conan stories, but then I discovered as they were getting republished, all of his other stories,
Solomon
his adventure
Kane.
Stories,
yeah, right.
And his westerns, mm-hmm. and all the ones that, all I've read was Conan and Kull,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he had all this other library of stories, and then before he blew his brains out at age 30.
He took the Hemingway.
Yeah. And it's...
I thought you were going to say Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, well, you know, I read him too, but not as much as these other writers. Like Stranger in a Strange Land, mm-hmm. I read.
Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Glory Road, I would recommend mm-hmm. highly for you.
Glory Road, mm-hmm. right now, I have to say, I'm reading Dune. And
awesome book.
It's slow for me.
It's dated.
It's definitely, like, I feel like if I would have read this in high school, I think I might would have enjoyed it a little more.
Which is when I read it. So,
yeah. So, but, like, you know, I go back to the classics. I have, like, you know, I just like even just classic mythology, mm-hmm. you know, I'll go back to. But, you know, it's always been my bread and butter for sure, science fiction and fantasy, because as a fantasy fan, you know, Elfstones of Shannara, even, you know, you go back to these books because there was nothing to consume in TV or movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every once in a while,
right.
you would get something and it would be awful. and then it was like literally one in every 10 things being made. And this is over the span of a decade,
right.
would be watchable until, you know, we got Lord of the Rings, which changed everything.
Yes, you know, but thankfully...
Oh, this is what fantasy should look like.
Yeah, and thankfully you didn't say my favorite thing. It changed everything. Forever.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know if it's forever, guys. Come on. Anyway, but yeah, I'm in total agreement with that. I couldn't believe as I was growing up and going to Saturday matinees and seeing Tarzan movies and the old mm-hmm. pulp science fiction and the thing that the monster that challenged the world and all the great monster movies that someday, once I was at a point where I'm supposed to be adult, the greatest time to be an arrested adolescent moviegoer is today with the science fiction, the fantasy, the comic book, the action. We were talking over breakfast this morning, what could the James Bond movies possibly do now?
Right, exactly.
How do you go against the Mission Impossibles and the Jason Bournes and the Triple X's? And everything is a James Bond movie now.
Right.
And they're bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So, yeah,
what you have stunts, you have car chases, you have beautiful women.
You have visual effects.
And you basically, you're putting all those together, just maybe in a different sequence.
Right, different star.
Yeah, and you know, there's certain franchises there's a specific formula that it's not going to change, mm-hmm. and there's no way it can change. It's like, Jurassic Park is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. What could possibly happen in a Jurassic Park movie?
Can't imagine.
Yeah, there's adults. Dinosaurs get out, they eat people. Right. That's it. That's the only place these movies can go, unless someone can come up with some crazy new take on a Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah.
I'd be the first one in line to see it.
Yep.
Like let's see what happens. Maybe the dinosaurs evolve like Planet of the Apes and they mm-hmm. become their own society.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I admit that you know, there's a whole subgenre of giant robots now.
Mm-hmm.
But I've realized, just like anything else, be it kung fu or food, I prefer great.
Mm-hmm.
They're great, and there's good, and there's not good.
You don't want to waste a movie or a meal.
That's right. Well, I'm actually, because of the podcast and other things, I love wasting movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I go see basically every action movie that's out,
mm-hmm.
when I see something... You see, I really resent Transformers 5 because it's not bad enough.
That's I don't the know problem. If I would agree with that. I think it was pretty bad.
Have you seen it? Oh, you saw it?
Oh, I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, it was better than 4.
Well, you know what? 4 is the one I haven't seen. I've seen 1 through 3, and I've seen 5. 4 is the one I've missed.
I thought 5 had a nice sense of self, of insulting yourself before the audience insulted it. I mean, they would mention their wardrobe. They would mention the bombastic music. They would make comments. So Michael Bay was letting the audience know, yeah, I know, don't care. I'm going to do it what I want to do anyway.
Well, he said that since movie 1.
That's true. He tried.
Yes.
Pain and Gain at one point.
No, yeah, like, oh, okay, so let's see. We've got the cheaper British Megan Fox in this movie. We've got the cheaper C-3PO in this movie. We've got...
The more expensive Mark Wahlberg,
yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins doing his Doctor Who audition.
And saying, move your fat ass.
Yes.
That's great.
And beautifully.
Somebody got paid to write that on a script page.
No, somebody got paid to write something, but not that. I'm pretty sure Sir Anthony came up with that on his own on the set. He improved that. But so tell me your schedule at this point. You have a family. You have children.
Yes,
and
so I'm very tired.
Yes, and you have the website. You have affiliated stuff. You have that stupid movie.
Yes, we have Comedy Film Nerds. We have Asylum. We have the good movie coming out, Earbuds, the podcasting documentary. That'll be out in September. But like I said, you can get it at Comedy Film Nerds now, DVD or digital download.
So how many movies do you get to see?
I see one a week.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just see one a week. I see it at parent time. The parent time is at Friday at 11 a.m. when the kids are in school.
Right.
That is my movie time. So it's this very specific time. It's me, a couple of bloggers, and a couple of people over 70.
Wow.
They're in the movie theater at Friday at 11 a.m.
And do you get a cheaper rate?
So you get a bit of a cheaper rate,
good.
Yes. Ooh. So that's when I see movies. And then if I can't get there, then I do like an on-demand. Like one of the ways that Graham and I do the podcast is we don't see the same movie unless it's a spoiler ep, because we try to cover as many movies as we can.
Didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So... but
do you guys have to fight, arm wrestle over who's seeing which movie?
Every once in a while, you know, there's one where we each take the hit on. Like, I did Transformers, but, you know, I can't remember the last one he took the hit on. But, yeah, then he'll take a hit on one. And then I think I took the hit on 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh,
poor
man.
And then the sequel, oh, which was even better.
Yeah.
So many unanswered questions answered from the first one. So that's kind of how we work, and we just don't have the bandwidth to see more than one movie a week.
You're talking about the mental bandwidth?
Yeah, just the time bandwidth, for sure.
Time bandwidth. What a great movie title. Call Terry Gilliam.
Yes. So, and then, of course, I'm working on the graphic novel that was kickstarted.
That's right, tell us about that.
Yeah, that's called Long Ago and Far Away. It was kickstarted, and it was successfully funded. And the premise is, I always loved the Narnia books, where the kids go into the other world. But I always thought, like, what happens when they come back, and one of them is 30, runs a comic book store, and he's kind of a jerk, and then he's got to go back into that world again as an adult, and then he just screws things up because he's such a jerk. So that's the premise of the comic book. It's called Long Ago and Far Away.
Where is it?
Right now, it is being inked right now. So we have a professional letter and obviously a professional artist, and we're hoping to get it out by October of this year. Now that might be a little ambitious, but we're doing our best. It's an indie project, so everything takes longer.
Is it still under Kickstarter? Can people contribute?
No, it's not under Kickstarter anymore, because what happens is the funding gets cut off.
Right.
But you could go to Kickstarter, look up the page, and you could see the video and download the first chapter just to kind of read it.
Awesome.
Because that's free. And then just kind of whet your appetite for when it actually comes out.
And now, as if you weren't busy enough, you told me yesterday that you now have a new podcast.
Yes, I'm starting a new podcast, and it's a scripted podcast. So I think this is the first time I'm announcing it. It is called Conversations from the Abyss, and it is a Twilight Zone-style horror creepy podcast that records a conversation between two living things, possibly.
Wow. You described it better this time than you did yesterday.
And what it is, it will be out probably in the next month or two. We have about half of them recorded, because they do require a little kind of audio production, because there are some sound effects and music that we're putting in.
Wow.
And it'll be a season of 8 episodes, and then I have the second season of 8 stories beat it out, and I'm borrowing cast members from Thrilling Adventure Hour and Welcome to Night Vale.
Awesome!
So I just kind of called in a bunch of favors, and I was like, well, who can pull off creepy, but like, because I also had to pull the comedians and actors that could do straight roles, not just comedic.
Right.
So, and I was able to corral a bunch of people, and because the other thing that made the casting more challenging is they're all one-off stories, so you can't just say, all right, here's the four people, do all the episodes. So I had about 16 to 18 different actors that I had to cast, but it's something I'm really excited about. I've been wanting to do a scripted podcast for a long time, and now that the earbuds was done, and also with LA Podfest, we actually hired somebody to run it.
Well,
so you know, I had a window in my schedule where I just said, well, I need to get myself back into writing, and I want to get my writing out there more. And so that will be launching in the next month or two, called Conversations from the Abyss.
Conversations from the Abyss. And, of course, everybody can find it on your website, Comic Film Nerd's website. Mm-hmm.
And it'll be on iTunes, too.
And it'll be on iTunes. Mm-hmm. So I think the one thing we can take away from this podcast is that you are a very serious masochist.
Yes. That is true. I have a much higher tolerance for failure than I should.
Well, you don't have a tolerance for putting yourself behind the creative of eight ball. I mean, if I could think of a more difficult podcast to pull off, I couldn't think of a more. Oh, let's, okay, now you have to sit on ground glass while you're writing it. That's pretty much it. That's all you can do. Well, thank you so much, Chris. I don't think there's anything I missed. I'm personally excited. I wanted to let you know that I do a sign off every episode, and that now I have my guest. Say it in unison. The sign-off is, use your blinkers, jackass.
Okay.
All right, so I'll count to three. And I hope everybody at home will give a little round of applause to my guest, Chris J. Mancini, and check out his stuff. You may regret it, but you'll never forget it. I guarantee you'll enjoy it, and I think I kind of much guarantee you'll enjoy it. It's really pretty awesome. I know his work, and I thank him for being a guest, co-host every year for the Kung Fu Extravaganza here at San Diego Comic-Con.
Great to be here. Always a good time.
Okay, now everybody's forgotten that I've already told you the sign-off. Something recording, apparently. Okay. All right.
Good thing you have a lot of storage on the phone.
And now... gee. Come on. Stop. Yes. Press to open.
Should we do another episode?
Yeah, we already are.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more Film Fun, Frenzy, and Friends. Until then,
give me a real fight.
Check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
Sonic.